Hello. So, if you're listening to this on the Friday, you would benefit from this heads up. And if you listen to podcasts whenever you listen to podcasts, then I guess, you know, live your best chaotic life. That being said, ayo, next week, May 30th to June 5th, is Black Birders Week. So, if you have Instagram, head on over to Black AF in STEM. On their account, they're posting a schedule of all of the different events that are going on for Black Birders Week, ways that you can support, engage, and just connect with Black Birders within the field of ornithology, and just those who aren't technically scientists, but have just a passion for birding and want to connect with wildlife in a more meaningful way. So if that sounds like your cup of tea, definitely check their events out. Again, that's Black Birders Week over on Black AF in STEM. Okay, that's on Instagram. This is not an ad, by the way. I just am like, I need more people to like support and get in contact and reach out to Black Birders, because I need like, I need y'all to really give Black Birders their flowers. So yeah, go check their events out. Go support. That being said, you are listening to this episode and I still haven't even introduced myself or what we're going to be talking about. You're like, what's going on? Hey, hi. If this is the first episode you're listening to of Zabuma Foolish, I am curious why. Go back and listen to other episodes. But that being said, hey, you are listening to Zabuma Foolish with me, your host, Jay. And let's just jump into the episode because we got a fun one for you today. Winnie the Pooh. Okay, cute, great. So that was one of my first shows that I actually was introduced to the animal owl. And I had never heard of an owl before, never seen an owl before. And I actually wouldn't see an owl in real life until I think 19. That's when I first saw an owl in real life. And I got to actually hold a barn owl as a part of this educational side of the camp that I was helping to run in Spain. That's a long story. I'll just post the photo over on Patreon. That being said, owls have always, like, intrigued me, but they're kind of confusing because for me, I'm like, how does something so big make absolutely no noise when it flies? Yeah, that's a gag. That's gagaroni, macaroni in the pot. Wop, 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 girls. Because if you didn't know, owls don't make any noise when they fly. Like, zero. Actually, what I'll do is I'll go ahead and I'll post a video about this in the extra content for today's episode so you can actually see. But there was this study that was done that was trying to not only, like, measure how efficient birds were flying, but in this study, they were looking at the energy that is saved when wings are being flapped, and they just found out that owls, when they're flapping their wings, it's literally, there's no sound. There's absolutely no sound, which, of course, is a great tool to have in your arsenal if you're a nighttime hunter flying through the skies, landing in on your prey like some terrifying demon of the night. Imagine that. Oh my goodness, that is so scary. And then they just come through and be like, speaking of hoots, actually, I was doing some research for today's episode. Also, lol, if you couldn't tell, this week's animal of the week is owls. Yeah, just no specific species of owl, just like owls generally. And I was doing some research into owls, specifically about their hoots, because I was trying to understand, okay, like, girl, what are you actually saying when you're like, hoo, 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 hoo? Hooty-hoo, hooty-hoo, you know what I'm saying? Like, girl, what is the tea here? And so in my research, I found that apparently the first and foremost thing is a tool for them to just, like, tell other owls in the area to just fuck off. It's like, this is my tree, do not come here. And so a lot of the time, hoots that you'll hear are just a way for the owl to claim their territory and to fend off any kind of would-be intruders. But that's not the only use of hoots. Yeah, You know it. Hoots also, okay, can help to signal the presence of a predator. So, I mean, we kind of know that one. Birds always be chatting shit to each other, being like, ah, there's a human, ha, there's a human coming, ha, run away, ha, 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 look at their clothes, ha, ha. I'm like, y'all, honestly, if you ever walk by a murder of crows, like, they just love talking the most shit about you. So, yeah, those calls, those verbalizations, those vocalizations, right, are also a way to communicate if there's something dangerous within the area. But then this is the gagaroni that I did not expect to learn about hoots during this research, is that hoots are actually so specific and distinct to the individual that owls are actually able to tell each other apart from their hoots. Yeah, so apparently some owls hoot with like an extra t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t-t- OA sound. And so all these different variations of the hoot kind of function as like a name. And so individuality is really easy to identify amongst owl communities because the hoots or their calls are so specific to them, to the individual who is making the call. And I was like, it was a little bit gagged, you know, like, because I thought that all hoots were alike. I thought all Horton Hears a Hoot, you know? Oh, no, that's not the name of the movie. But Horton Hears a Hoot and would be confused because he's not an owl and doesn't understand the intricacies of the hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-tee culture. Now, a final point that I kind of want to make about owls before we jump into this week's 626 is that owls actually are monogamous. I know, and I know y'all know me on this podcast. I'm not a monogamous stan by any means. But apparently, y'all, owls in a monogamous relationship have, like, specific hoots just for each other in that relationship. Isn't that so funny? So that's kind of like when, you know, you can hear the homies be like, oh, babe, is this? Or, oh, I just love my sweetie pie. And you're like, okay, I guess that's a word that y'all use with each other to communicate affection. Like, from the outside, you don't get it. You know, if you're not in the relationship, you don't understand. Why are you calling them your booger? Why are you calling them your little lovey puppy? But to them, in the relationship, it makes sense. It communicates exactly, right, the message that they want to, which is like, I love you, or hold me, or whatever, what have you. I'm not a monogamous girly, so I don't know how they operate. But I love that owls are out here doing that same thing, out here with their little pet names, with their little pet hooty hoots, I should say, for each other, that they only use to reaffirm and communicate publicly that they are in relationship. Girl, go on with your romantic owl ass self. I love. But we cannot be wasting any more time because I have to jump into this week's 626. Before, you know what, I'm trying to make it a surprise for you, but I guess the cat is out of the bag because this week's episode is actually an interview, yes, with the one, the only, Faith Morgan, y'all. So, I mean, you'll clock it in the interview because she talks about it a little bit. But Faith Morgan is an incredible educator, an incredible wildlife scientist and researcher. And a lot of her past job experience and her past research experience has been within the field of ornithology, which is the study of birds. And specifically, she's looking into some of the things that are going on with owls. And I just like, ooh. I was like, okay, you said inspo. And so that was the reason for the inspiration for today's Animal of the Week and subsequent 626. Oh, Wow, really bad at surprises, evidently. But here we go. 626 is titled Habitat Use by Barn Owls Across a Rural to Urban Gradient, and an assessment of stressors including habitat loss, rodenticide exposure, and road mortality. Now, this paper is thick, y'all. Like we said, thick with three C's. Each C is 12 citations because that is, ooh, chow. It was a lot to read. And so I'm going to do something a little bit different today. I'm not going to like walk y'all through the entire paper. What I'll do is if the title sounds interesting to you and if like some of the content I'm talking to you about right now sounds interesting to you, head on over to Patreon and you can like access the full paper there. It was written, mind you, 2016 by scientists by the name of Sophie Hindmarsh, John E. Elliott, Sean McCann, and Paul Levesque. However, again, we're not going to go through the whole paper, so if you want that extra content, head on over to Patreon. Something I found super interesting, though, also while reading this paper, and I did not clock until I got into the methods section, was that this study was conducted in my backyard, y'all. This study was conducted across the Lower Fraser Valley, or I should say more specifically, Metro Vancouver. And I was just gagged because I was reading through it and I was like, this study is so cool. They're looking at the gradient, at the shifts in owl behavior from the more rural to the more urban. I'm like, anyway, wow, going off on a tangent. I got really excited when I read about the paper, and then I got even more excited when I found out that it was in my own backyard. And then I got even more excited when I was reading the results. So that's what we're going to do now. We're just going to jump straight to the results of the paper. But for a little bit of context, because you're like, what the hell are you talking about, Jalen? So this paper, right, this research project, they looked into what was happening with owls, essentially, as they moved from farmlands and agricultural areas into our urban centers. Now, the researchers, they were able to trap 7 barn animals in a semi-urban and urban landscape, and then they had trapped and collared another 4 in a more agricultural or more farmland landscape. Now, the owls that they had radio tagged, they actually found them across a variety of different nesting sites. So these included human structures like barns, silos, industrial buildings, underneath highway bridges, y'all. Okay? That's where owls were roosting. And some also were in trees. Now, also for all of the owls in the study except for one, they were in a mating pair. So they were like having a little lovely monogamous family moment, except for one female owl who was never seen mating. She was just like hunting, doing her own thing, living her own life. We love you. She's identified in the study as female number 138. Go off. But again, we can't talk about all of the little pieces and bits of this paper because it's huge, and two, we have an interview to get to. So what I want to talk about is something that I found super interesting while reading, which was about their diet, section 3.4 of the paper. So if you scroll down to that section, you'll find that they found some really interesting things when they examined the pellets or the fecal samples from the owls in the study. They found that, this is why I was shocked, because I thought that owls mainly ate mice. Like, that's all you eat, right? Like, mice, maybe a rat here or there, but y'all are, like, living your mouse moment. No, honey, they said the majority of owls actually eat voles. Yeah, Microtis oregani is the actual species name, Latin, but y'all know my history with Latin on this podcast. It's not my strongest skill, so yeah, we're going to move on. They found also that after voles, the next thing that was the most commonly ate prey species was shrews, and then it was followed by rats. And that shocked me because I would have thought that rats would have been, you know, a larger part of their diet. Now, this is where it gets super interesting, is because the paper found that there was much, 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 much more variation, right, in the consumption of rats than in any of the other species that owls feast upon. And that variation was because owls eat more rats the closer and closer they move into our urban centers. And how are they able to find this? Well, they were able to correlate it with the, percent of impermeable land surface, which is a very common metric that we use in urbanization studies, because the impermeable land surface just essentially means concrete. So the ratio of concrete to more natural land surfaces is an indicator of how urbanized an environment is. And I thought it was just really interesting that as impermeable land surfaces increase, that diet also is shifting, and that diet is changing, right, to consume more rats. Now, this identifies actually a really unique conflict potential, which then jumps us into our what's the sitch for this week. And that is rodenticide consumption by owls. I was talking a little bit about this over on my IG this week, because we were having a conversation about zoos, about the sort of work that zoos claim that they do around conservation, around research, around education. And I was kind of talking about how complex a lot of these issues are, how faceted, how nuanced these issues are, right? And how you can't just change something without first realizing what it's connected to. And so people, right, wanting to stop owls from being harmed or stop owls from being injured, don't then also understand that the injury, the violence, the harm that owls experience is actually directly tied to the vilification of rats in media, to your perception of rodents and how you view rodents as a pest animal or as something that is disgusting or gross. People don't realize that that socially conditioned view of rodents, right, actually leads us collectively to do things like rodenticide, where we just poison entire populations of rats, or we do things like where we have very specific engineering practices to design traps to capture and kill these species. We don't recognize that in and of itself, right, that socially conditioned, very harmful, very violent view, very negative view of rats, right, not only inadvertently takes away prey from owls that live within our urban centers, but then it also exposes them, right, to poisoned prey. It exposes animals, right, to that potential to consume, owls specifically, not animals, it exposes owls, right, with that potential to consume rats that have ingested rodenticide or any other form of poison, right, for their control, for their population control. And that, again, only because we see them as pest animals. Right. So again, people be like, oh, I want to help and I want to save the owls. I want to do the thing. And I'm like, okay, cute. That's a really good thing to want to like help the individual. But if we're not following that same line of reason through how the problem manifests, right, tracking all that symptoms, and we follow that line of reason down to actually what's the real problem, right? What's causing all these symptoms? We have to carry that through. We have to carry that energy through, right? And so it's not just about looking at the individual species ever. It's never just about looking at the individual species when you're trying to either conserve a population of animals or help an individual, right? You have to look at what that species interacts with, what that species consumes, what consumes that species, what that species shares space with, right? Because all of those things will inform how we actually develop meaningful, sustainable, and effective solutions for wildlife that are in conflict with humans, especially as that conflict increases as a function of urbanization. Ooh, mama! Oh my gosh, you know when you have like a spicy moment in your mind and you're like, okay, keep coming. As someone who has ADHD, y'all, like something that I experience way too often is I'll be talking and then as I'm speaking about something, like my brain will start to jump to the next thing that I want to speak about. And sometimes this will create like a time mismatch where then I like I'm thinking too intensely about the thing I'm about to say instead of what I'm trying to say, and I'll just stop talking. It'll just be like an abrupt stop. So super happy that didn't happen in that moment. I was feeling my little spicy owl oats. That is this week's episode. I know, short, sweet, cute little moment. And you're like, girl, why? You blew through 626 and what's the sitch in no time. Honey, I know I did. But remember, we have an interview to get to. So, without further ado, y'all know how I feel about that transition. Okay, without wasting any more of your time, I'm not wasting your time either because you're listening to this podcast. Wow. Okay, so I'm not good at transitions, but let's just acknowledge that this is the part of the episode where we are now going to be moving into the interview. Today's guest is, yep, you heard it here, Faith Morgan. So she is a phenomenal Black woman in STEM, and she's recently started her master's research following the completion of her biology degree at the University of Florida. So today, I'm honored to welcome her onto the podcast where we discuss some of her research, her experiences in academic spaces, and some of her future goals and ambitions. Faith is not only an educator, but she's also a supermodel, a scientist, and so much more. And I'm just so thankful that we got some time today to spend together, hold space, and chat with each other about our experiences in STEM. I must warn y'all that because of my own inability to operate technology, there was some technical There was some technical difficulties at the start of the interview, which actually led to the first 2 minutes being deleted. Sorry. But hey, that actually just makes for a little bit more of a dynamic start. So let's jump into the interview now and we'll meet back up later.
Hello.
Okay, hi.
I am so sorry for those technical difficulties. I am just like, do we know if that recording saved? Do we know? We will find out. But we will continue. We will power through because that's what we do over on Zaboomah Foolish. We just like make it work. But just in case, I am. I'll do a little intro for you. Just at the top, so that we don't need to really worry about that. And we were just actually talking kind of about like the story about how you found your academic supervisor and kind of your journey throughout your undergrad. And I thought it was really interesting, like just listening to that, because there were so many similarities between like me and you, just not only in like the fact that I also thought I wanted to be a vet, and then I also was fumbling through undergrad, and then I also found out about wildlife super late, and it was just like, wow, I'm like, okay, so we really be out here having like such similar experiences. And I was wondering, what were some of your favorite courses that you took during your undergrad? Hello.
Hello.
Hey, hello.
Can you hear me?
I can now, yes.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I was talking that whole time. That's crazy. Okay.
Oh my God, that is so wild. Okay, so Anchor is really trying to play games with us today, y'all.
Yeah.
No,
but it's fine. We got it. We're powering through. You asked about my favorite courses. So my absolute favorite course was probably my ornithology class that I took my senior year. And I think that's what, I don't think, I know, that's definitely like what got me so interested in birds, pretty much been fascinated ever since. Okay. I also took a wildlife techniques course. And like I was saying, like the wildlife ecology and conservation program at my school was like so specific to like anything wildlife. And in that course, we basically learned like research techniques, like how to misnet birds, trapping raccoons and like other small mammals, like electrofishing,
wow,
like tracking amphibians, like using GPS, like all of that. So
that's
like,
now legit skills. Like those are really good skills.
Exactly. And at the time, like, I was just doing it because, you know, I had to get an A, but like, I didn't realize how useful, like all those techniques that I learned, like were going to be, especially for my career. And like having all of those things, like being able to like put them out in bullets, like saying that I know how to do these, like on my CV and stuff.
Is, exactly.
Like, been so beneficial,
like,
because
Oh my God.
Exactly. So yeah, that, I would say that was like the most helpful class. Like, you know, like you take classes sometimes and you're like, why am I even learning calculus? Like this has nothing to do with nothing, but.
Yo. Yep. Don't even get me started. Like,
but that class had me like, okay, like I reflect and think about that class all the time. And I still like talk to that professor for that class and like, you know, get different like input,
oh my gosh,
like, about
who
some
is
the techniques
professor
that I'm using and stuff. Christina Romagosa.
Christina Roma Gosa. Okay, come here. If you are in uni right now and you are looking to get those skills, get in contact with Dr. Christina. No. Okay. Yes,
my class was
literally major.
Amazing. And like, yeah. And she honestly, tangent, but like, like mentor everything. Like, she's the one who like told me that, like, you know, she introduced me to this program called the Doris Duke Conservation Scholars. And it was literally just about like promoting diversity in like conservation. And it was,
oh, I love that.
Just,
wow.
Yeah. Like, that program changed my life for sure. And like, she literally, I was walking, like, I think outside of my class, and she like stopped me like in the hallway, and she was like, hey, like, probably like on some like, hey, black girl, like in this building.
That's, yeah.
That's, need to talk to you.
What they're on. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Like, it was like, yeah, it was amazing. Like, her, my conversation with her, she was like, you should apply for this program. Like, I think you'd be perfect. Or like, and I didn't know her from a can of paint. And then it was just like, and they pay you like to do like internships over the summer, and like, you can do wherever you want. So like, when I had my internship at like the St. Louis Zoo, that was through them. Like, my first like research field experience, like under somebody in the PhD program at the time, was through them. And like, you know, getting paid to do work like this is like so important, especially for like minorities, like who often don't have the resources to like, you know, just go do free labor like over the summers and stuff like that, and get ahead in life in those ways. So it was just like amazing.
Yo, I am so blown away, honestly, hearing this, because this is like, I'm like, is this why American universities are so expensive? Because that is a full like 40,000 times better in terms of like offering, in terms of technical training, in terms of actually setting you up for success than my university could ever. Wow, that is like, I'm actually blown away. Very happy that you got to like experience that, got to get that call, that invitation, right, by this Dr. Christina. And it's like, I just love that that kind of like led you down this sort of path to like explore and connect your obvious like love and curiosity around wildlife, but just like directing it through, I don't know, just like a more narrow and more, I guess, like specific pathway, if that makes sense. And I just like, I just think that it's so cool that you like jumped sort of into that through ornithology, which is just like, oof, come through. Well, speaking of also ornithology, we're on the cusp of Blackbirders Week again, which is coming around for its second iteration. Yes.
So exciting just to even see like things like that. Cause I didn't like, I don't know. I grew up thinking like, Black people don't like animals, like,
yep,
and that's all I've ever heard. And so it's like seeing all this stuff like coming up and like being able to be a part of things like that is just like so amazing. And like, well, even being able to like be an example for like, you know, generations after us who are going to see us like in these positions and in these places and just be like, you know, feel like it's okay.
It's actually wild because I feel like so similarly in the sense of like just taking up space and being a potential point of representation for individuals that like find similarities within our identities and then like feel that confidence to also take up space within this field. I love that you're like also on that same tip. But I think that you just brought up something super interesting, and it's kind of bringing me on this tangent, which is like this idea, right, that especially growing up Black, that you hear and you just, it's very much not necessarily like said verbatim, but this idea that Black people don't like animals. And I think that a lot of that, one, first and foremost, is just rooted, right, in the racist legacy that was the slave trade, but more so looking at just the ways in which society to this day can hold space and hold value for animals over Black lives. Like, it's absolutely wild. And I think that that sort of dissonance creates this disconnect, not necessarily between Black people and animals, but between society's view of Black people's relationship with animals, because society in and of itself has a very problematic view when it comes to how we engage with and form relationships with animals, because it's just so poorly informed by very much like this kind of, I want to say, and I'm now just rambling, tangenting on, but this very much like sort of white saviorist kind of mentality of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to come in. I'm going to interact with this animal. This animal knows nothing. It's lower than me. I can help it. I can speak for it. I can do all the things. And it's like, oh, don't kick a dog. And like, and these are very much now going on super tangents, but it's just like the ways in which people will not only view animals, but form relationships with them and then hold space for them in comparison to how we collectively don't do that for the Black community, I think has created some misconceptions around Black people's specific relationships with wildlife. But I don't know if that's something that
that makes a lot of, that makes a lot of sense. And I can see that, like, you talk about that a lot on your Instagram page too, like how, we think that like animals can't communicate and like, we think all those things. And it's like, you don't even give them a chance. And I feel like in a lot of spaces, like, you know, like white people don't give us a chance either.
Oh, that's tea. Yeah. Well, they're happy to speak for us. And that kind of takes me into this next point, because I mean, I know that we definitely had different yet probably not entirely dissimilar experiences throughout our undergrad. But I'm wondering if maybe there were times where you were also trying to navigate that kind of, I guess, like, a very violent nature in where white people will just, like, speak for you or speak on behalf of you or take space when you are clearly trying to hold space for yourself within like a course or within a classroom or within a lab setting. And I'm just wondering if like there was maybe any like particular instance that like really stood out for you during your undergrad that you were like, yo, it's wayward in here.
Honestly, in my undergrad, I don't know. I feel like I was a completely different person because I did not speak up in class. I didn't like say anything. I felt like I was oftentimes like, you know, the only Black person in the room. So I wouldn't, I don't know. I almost felt like I couldn't really say much.
Yeah. But I think that you probably also felt right this, like the hyper visibility that comes with that space too. Like if you do decide to say much, it's then all of a sudden like, oh, you're
all Black people think.
Yeah, exactly. Fucking wild. Duh.
Yeah.
Wild. So,
like, I had to get out of that, obviously, but it was like for a long time, like no one knew that I was out as outgoing. Like I rarely have friends like that are in, I guess, my field. Cause well, now I do obviously a lot more, but before I didn't really like talk to anyone else like in our field. Cause like, I didn't really get along with, well, not get along with them, but I didn't feel like I could relate to them.
Yeah.
And it was just like always like just struggling with like trying to like connect, beyond just liking animals and stuff like that. And even then I didn't feel like I was as credible as everyone else because I was Black.
Right. And I think it's so sinister how imposter syndrome works almost like over time against us when we're in these spaces, because it's like we're not only dealing with the first base layer of imposter syndrome that comes with, you know, not feeling confident because of our age, because of our lack of experience. But then it's also that added layer of being oftentimes hyper-visible by being the only Black people in these spaces, by having to shoulder this like put upon responsibility, not even asked upon, but put upon responsibility to like speak on behalf of entire Black communities. And like, it's just wild how that then also limits the type of engagement that we feel comfortable in, limits the type of relationships that we feel comfortable like seeking out. And ultimately, right, that actually has, that makes us have to work, I would say, more than 10 times harder to go out and to form those networks and connections that are so vital in this field, right? And I think that it's wild that it's taken things like Instagram and Black Birders Week and Twitter for us to start to find each other, because we literally are the only, like, we are the two, often we're literally the only Black people in these spaces. And so that's just, oof. Yeah, sorry, me on a tangent.
And then, like, when you were talking about, like, that one incident, I didn't have anything specifically that I remember, unless I, like, you know, like, traumatically, like, blocked it out of my memory. I remember last year, when I first got into my grad program or whatever. This is about to be another tangent, but so I won't say that story, but But so later on, I eventually go or whatever to my grad program. And, you know, in the midst of, like, you know, the murder of George Floyd and all those things that were happening around that time. And, like, you know, everyone realizing that America's racist, basically.
Mm-hmm. Black Square Summer is what I usually call it with my, like, white peers, because I'm like, y'all really were stunting for a hot 2 seconds.
For a whole summer. But, and, you know, everyone's posting the black pic and all that stuff. So, like, yeah, mm-hmm. all those weird things were happening. My program, I guess, like, there was emails going around about, like, them formulating, like, a diversity and inclusion committee and, you know, the works. So I was like, okay, like, this would probably be something. And they were asking for, like, graduate student input and things like that. And so I was like, okay, cool. I will be there. I will go to the meeting. So it's virtual, of course. Mm-hmm. We go in the meeting. And everyone has their cameras on. And I'm looking around and I'm like, okay, like, there's, like, two of us in here.
Got it. But, you know,
cool. Of course. Yeah. So at that point I felt like pressure, but I wasn't, you know, I was going to, like, go in with, like, open ears. That's what I tried to do every time, even though sometimes it's easier to just, like, automatically reject certain things. I just, you know, I was trying to be as open as possible to see what everyone had to say. And I actually had a faculty member. I'm literally sitting there not saying anything, just listening. I had a faculty member. I'm not going to say his name because that'll probably get me in trouble.
Yeah, no, we're all about safety here. Names will be bleeped.
he goes, mind you, I've never met this man in my life. He's like, well, Faith. He's like, they were arguing about like what specific bullet point was going to go first. And they were saying, like, yeah, we should prioritize, like, these anti-racism movements and things. And I don't know, I don't remember the specific things that they have on the list, but they were different things. And they were like, oh yeah, like, we should prioritize that because, you know, that's, like, something that we really need to work on ASAP and things like that, blah, blah, blah. And this professor literally called my name and he's like, Faith, as the only black person
on this call,
I kid you not, verbatim. Wow. He's like, I feel like,
my legs are shaking. Oh my God.
He's like, I feel like you should, you know, like, speak on behalf of your community. And I'm like,
yo, and it's in those moments, like, though. It's those moments you see just how incredibly delusional and wayward these handmaidens of Satan are. I cannot with these old white professors.
The thing is, he wasn't even white. He was Hispanic.
Okay, well, that's tea. People often think that only white people can be anti-black. And I'm like, no, mama, we literally live in a white supremacist society. Everyone has that literally built into them. It is socially conditioned into you from the jump. So anyone can weaponize their anti-blackness, especially if they're in a position of power, especially if they're a faculty member and you are on a Zoom call. That shit is so wild to me. And it's, again, it speaks to this kind of, like, one, there's two things that are coming up here. I think one thing that is happening is so often, especially within academic spaces, we are seen as some sort of representative for our communities. And that's only because, right, that viewpoint can only be held if you have a lot of anti-blackness to unlearn, because you do not view black people as individuals. You don't view black people as fully fledged humans with ranged lives, with intersectional identities. And you expect one individual who, on the basis of race, is in community with others to speak on behalf of an entire community. Like, that is so anti-black. It's so wayward. And so it's rooted right in this idea that the black experience or black communities are somehow in any way monolithic. That is, like, the first and foremost thing that I'm hearing from that experience. It's just, like, making me so upset. And then the second thing I'm hearing, right, is this thing that I'm also kind of experiencing right now, because I'm doing, like, justice, equity, diversity, inclusion work for the faculty too. And it's like this invitation, this request for our opinion, for our time, for our input, only when it's emotionally extractive, right? Only when it's under the umbrella of...
literally going to drain us.
Exactly. It's only when it's like equity, diversity, inclusion, like let's make this safe better. It's like, oh, so you actually just want to avoid a future lawsuit. And so you're now finding value in my input. But hey, like you literally are one of the most creative. You're a fly, you're a model, you're out here doing the things. I'm like, why aren't they out here utilizing or asking for input in the other things that you take joy in that are the other aspects of your personality, not just your blackness? And it's just like, it's exactly. So wild that this experience is very... It's very similar across black, like academia. Like I feel a lot of conversations I have with black people in academic spaces is that our input is only valued if it's for justice, equity, and diversity and inclusion work, and not when we are like, hey, yeah.
It's so crazy because I wasn't even the only black person on the call. So,
oh my god,
like, I was just the darkest or the most black looking. I don't know, but it was just like really annoying. So I kind of just like froze in shock. And the other black person on the call was like, "Well, as a male who identifies as black," and he like kind of just like stood up for me. But it was just like the fact that I even had to go through that, the fact that that even came out of his mouth, and he thought nothing of it, was just insane to me. So I ended
up speaking up. Well, the fact that no one else in the room checked him. No one, there was no moderator. There was no accountability afterwards. Like, and that's how we move in academic spaces with very little agency at this present time.
I told people that it happened and they were kind of like, yeah, he's a nut. Right.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm in a similar situation right now. Names will not be named. But in like the works right now to put together some like mandatory trainings for faculty, for undergraduates, and for graduate students, and just getting, you know, some slight pushback on the fact that like some of these will be mandatory. And I'm like, that's the point though. If I could, I would make all of them mandatory. Like, what? I'm like, we should not be focusing, we should not be prioritizing people who don't like want to have these conversations or don't want to like create safe spaces or create opportunities for black people in academia. Like that, these are the people that actually need to be sitting at these workshops and having these seminars done. You know what I'm saying? But also at the end of the day, it's like
in the front row.
Yeah. Front row. And you have homework and that will be graded and posted publicly. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, there needs to be greater engagement and accountability around how white power still operates within academic spaces, because as of right now, it's so unchecked. It is so wildly unchecked.
It is. It's ridiculous.
Okay, so we're gonna pivot a little bit. I'm getting like a little, I just get so like heated and then I get all these tangents and I feel like, yeah, we could talk about like this forever, but I did briefly in that like little tangent ranty tangent moment, I was just like mentioning the other creative aspects of your identity. And for maybe people who aren't familiar with some of the work you do online, your incredible aesthetic and your just like online presence, I was wondering if maybe you would like to share that right now. Let the listeners know a little bit about what you do online.
like my Instagram page is like Hot Girl Sciences, and that's literally me. Like, I don't know how else to describe me. Like, I love life.
Yes. Yeah.
I also have basically dedicated my entire life to science too. So, and recently, well, not recently, I guess like within the past year, like, you know, with COVID and everything, I basically had to figure out like other things that make me happy, because school was just not it for me anymore. Like school was just like so draining, especially like always being in these predominantly white spaces and always being slightly to like extremely uncomfortable and always just like dealing with, you know, the stress and like the pressure that comes with that. I started taking like pictures and like doing things and collaborating with like other creatives like who are photographers, whether it be like fashion designers or like different things like that, and collaborating with them and trying to make like some cool things, you know. And it's been so fun. And like someone kind of told me like, hey, like you should try to do modeling, and I was like, okay, cool, like you know like why not. I ended up getting like some professional pictures taken, and then I like
Comes through.
Sent them to like an agency, and I was like, okay, by you know the end of the year, hopefully one of these agencies like accept me. And then I got accepted into like the first one that I tried to do.
Okay, yes, and you did.
So yeah, and it's just been like taking off. Like, and the support that I've gotten has been like really, really great. And you know, so like oftentimes people see me and they think that there's like not really much in my head, and like that's why I'm so big on like on my page and like promoting science and like my modeling career and letting people know that it's okay to like pursue both, and it's okay to have two very different dreams that you want to explore. And I love that people have been so accepting of it. I love that people have been so accepting of me doing this and supporting the whole like Hot Girl Sciences brand. But I know some people don't probably agree with it because it's like I'm promoting like a party girl image or like, you know, whatever that may be, but
bye, not for them. Goodbye.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, that's what the unfollow button's for. So like that's not my worry.
Yeah,
honestly.
No.
And it's that just is, like ooh. Yeah. And I feel like women, like especially Black women, are often criticized for like being too sexual or too loud or too much or whatever that means.
Yeah.
And I kind of think I just like own being me and like kind of just doing whatever I want. And people might not be okay with that. Like, and I just feel like my peers, like especially in academia, they're a lot more reserved. So to see like how I am and how like free I am and how like, you know, like I don't know how else to say this without sounding like, you know, kind of like
I almost No, just say it. No, you can swear.
Like,
you can swear.
I'm like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, yeah. You like can... an ass, but it's like I really I don't care. Like I just live. Like I
yes,
literally
no.
every day and I just do what I want to do, and it's just kind of like, you know, I feel like that's how people, like, life is so short. Like, I feel like everyone should just do what they want to do, so.
No, that's tea. Honestly, what's the lyric again? Mill fingered on my pictures, just remind y'all I ain't having it.
Exactly.
I can't.
Exactly.
It's literally
that's
just, like.
Literally me in a nutshell.
And that's honestly, it's tea. That, and I can't, if I'm being honest, I can't remember how we even, like, came into contact. If I think I was just, like. Did I follow you first, or do you follow me?
I think you did. I remember you DM'd me.
Yes, okay, like, that's what I thought.
And then I went on your page, and I was like, oh my God, like, what? You're talking about me. You're amazing.
No, okay, that's tea. Yes, okay, good. I didn't want to, like spin this story. I had made up in my head, but I'm glad that that's what had happened. But, yeah, no, because I remember, and this is, like, the thing that with you taking up space and like just being the full like range of yourself online, I'm just like, oh, I was just like, yes, more of this. I'm so over this idea that we as Black people have to be pigeonholed into one identity so that we can be palatable or so that we can have access to spaces. And I love that you are a scientist, you are also a model, you are also a creative, you are also an educator, a content creator. Like there are so many different aspects to you that you get to like showcase that isn't in the very fucking restrictive box that is a lab coat. And I very much love that you are taking up this space. And like, yeah, just have all the appreciation for you. to be honest, I'm just like, yeah, fangirling hard. But
like, I just want everyone to just, you know, live life, you know. Mm-hmm.
No, that's tea. And obviously, with taking up space so visibly online, there does come some wayward individuals that are in their ways and want to just hold on to their white supremacist values, and they'll just like do wayward things, like clone your Instagram account and try
Yeah. I was like, are you referring to that? Yeah, like I don't know. I mean obviously everyone like has like haters or people that don't like really like what they're doing, but it's like I don't understand why people are so bothered by me. Like,
yeah. To go out of their way to make a whole fake account about you. That blew my mind.
Yeah, I was like, but I mean at the same time I was like, okay, like I guess I'm kind of famous.
Well, that's tea, because
like,
actually
like,
people don't know
enough to do all of that, like
exactly. I'm so happy yeah,
with
I'm very happy. You like
my mom also, like she worries about like me getting haters eventually, and like if I like grow up, like she worries about that. But I'm like, I like I said earlier, like I literally don't care. Like even when that happened, I was like, you guys report this page, like whatever, and I went on with my day. Like, at the end of the day, like, I'm going to keep doing what makes me happy. And if you don't like it, sorry.
Exactly. You are putting the energy and the work into growing yourself, into growing who you are, into like developing and existing on this planet and just like taking up that space. And I think that people don't understand, especially the haters, they don't understand, is that the energy that they are divesting from doing that same work for their lives, they're just putting it into you. So that, exactly. That's energy. Like, people don't understand physics. It's like energy cannot be created or destroyed, literally only transmuted. So you are just giving me energy, whether it's like, you may think it's negative, but at the end of the day, you're just broadening the reach. You're broadening the conversation. My name is being put into more people's. There are things that you are doing that are not actually going to work again. Yeah, exactly.
Bad attention is cool attention.
I don't know,
the support has been overwhelmingly like great, so it's like I for every like 50 people that are supporting me, there's probably like one person that hates me, so I'm okay with those odds.
Good. Yes. Okay, good. We like to hear those ratios, but still wayward people get blocked. Hit them. Okay. So yeah. I realize we are running short for time. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I could talk about this forever. I just love like being in conversation with you. And okay. Yes. So last couple points. You did mention earlier that you were like looking, or you had to go out of your way to like find other things that were making you happy. And I was in doing a little bit of research for the episode, I came across this article that said that you were, one of your goals was to potentially do some collaboration with National Geographic or Animal Planet. So what's that about?
My literal ultimate dream in life is to have like a TV show where you can have just like, you know, a Black girl talking about nature, talking about animals, talking about everything. So I really would love that. I have no idea how to get there. So I'm still working on that plan.
Okay.
But I think that would be like the perfect way for me to like, you know, combine everything that I love, like the science aspect, the modeling aspect, because it's a TV show. Like that is my ultimate dream.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well. We will, you know what, you've said it, you've put it out into the world. I'm also on some similar tips right now. We're going to make this happen. But for those listening that want to like support you on this dream and on this journey, where can they find you? Where can they interact with you?
So yeah, I have an Instagram. My Instagram is Hot Girl Scientist, just spelled like that. My Twitter is Hot Girl Scientist, but the last I in scientist is not there because Twitter only allows you to make an app name with a certain amount of letters.
Gotta love it.
Like, does it look weird to say scientist or just
help us figure it out? You made the right choice. You made the right choice.
So I made the right choice. But yeah, you guys can find me there. I also have like links to I have a link tree in my Instagram, and you guys can find my YouTube and like some of my other projects. If you ever need a model, you can book me there too.
Okay. I love that. Y'all listening, I'll make sure I'll go ahead and link all of those handles in the show notes for today's episode. And I'll also pop them in on the extra content for y'all over on the Patreon, so you can make sure that you can go out, support, and connect with Faith a little bit more. But I don't want to take up any more of your time. I very much love this little interview moment, and so appreciative that we. Too. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And also, if anyone ever wants to like DM me, asking questions, like I am super friendly. I promise. I am here to help if anyone ever needs anything, and I can help you.
I love that.
Shoot me a DM.
Okay, perfect. But also, this is a warning to, I know the listeners, y'all are generally good, but don't, if you move mad in the DMs, you know, just, you'll get blocked. So you can DM, but just move considerately. Okay. Just to reaffirm that, and okay, yeah, I guess we'll end it. But I will, again, so thankful for having you on today. I can't wait to see You on Netflix, on Nat Geo, on all the things. We were going to get you there. You were going to get there. It's just, I can't wait for us to
decide. I can't wait either. We're going to, we're going to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you so much. I'll let you
go. Thank you so much. And we'll chat.
And we're back. Okay. Cute little interview moment. Hope y'all enjoyed the interview with today's guest, Faith. If you are looking to connect with Faith, I'll be sure to share her email, her social medias, and other ways that you can connect with her over on the extra content for today's episode. That'll be available on the Patreon, as always, patreon.com/jauntingj. I'm loving these interview moments. I'm loving these opportunities. So if you are listening and you're like, oh my gosh, I know of an Indigenous researcher or like someone Black in STEM that you think would be an excellent guest on the podcast, send me a message. Email me their name. Email me their info to jaunting.j@gmail.com and we'll get them paid. We'll get them on the podcast. We'll get them interviewed because that's the tea, right? We got to create spaces for ourselves and then we got to fill them. We got to fill them with ourselves. So I'm just very happy that this episode went the way it went, even though there were technical difficulties, even though it was a little messy boots. I just really loved having that conversation with Faith. So I'm going to end it here. I'll catch y'all next week for another episode of Zaboomba Foolish and hope y'all have fun going to those Black Birder Week events that I know y'all going to go to. Okay. Catch y'all later. Bye. Yeah.